yelling and crying and being mad. I did everything I was supposed to do. They say be a good kid, I did. They say run fast and do good, I did. They say stand out amongst other players, and I was the best out of a lot of them. You know, it's just like, I knew what it is. Because I weren't hearing you.
Welcome to Willing to Fail. I'm your host, Peyton Bennett, as usual. Today we got a very special guest. He is not only the first one-handed player in D1 college football history, but he was also an All-American. He was the American Conference Defensive Player of the Year. Then he was drafted 141st overall in the fifth round to the Seattle Seahawks, where he joined his brother. And he was also, of course, the only one-handed player in NFL history. With no further ado, Jakeem Griffin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, bro. Thank you for having me today, man. It's going to be a good one.
Appreciate you coming on. So I think most people have heard your story. I mean, I first came across your story and before it got a lot of nationality, like at Central Florida. So hey. I was very excited to see you get all in the limelight for a while because your stories are so crazy. But for me, just as like an NFL fan, I knew your story, but without doing research before this interview, I didn't really understand like why you have one hand. So it's kind of hard to tell your story without starting there. So I guess if you could just tell the audience kind of what you were born into and kind of your situation.
Well, just to give like a quick background of it, you know, the way I was born, and I had, you know, what it was, a disease called amniotic band syndrome, and which is initially is a thin tissue that wraps around my wrist, and it kind of caught up circulation. So that's how it kind of created where, you know, as I was born, I had the five fingers, but with no bone density because of the lack of circulation that I had during the when me and my brother was in the womb. And it's crazy because me and my brother, we're close today. We've been close all our life. We was close before we even got brought into this life. And it's the thing is why I'm saying it's just because, you know, the doctors gave the option to remove that thin tissue from around my wrist, but because me and my brother were so close that we was always, every time we was moving into my mom's womb, we would always stand right next to each other, right next to each other. So it said if we were to move the thin tissue, it could have wrapped around any other part of the twins. So my mom had to make the decision to say, you know what, instead of doing any of that, let's just keep it how it is and we'll deal with whatever comes after. And then, as you know, I come out with the five fingers, but it's just tissue. And during the growing up process, having them tissues on my hand created a lot of sensitivity because of it didn't have that bone density that can grab, that can punch, that can, you know, have this certain type of whatever physicality to it. I couldn't really do much. All the way up to the age of four, I couldn't do anything. You know, I couldn't really do anything physical. Every time I used to fall, I bumped my hand, scratch it up. You know, obviously being 4 years old or being that little kid growing, you know, you have a lot of pain where it affects you. And, you know, you can't do much. You're going to cry a lot. And I remember being that kid just looking outside the window, watching my brothers play football and go up and down the street screaming touchdowns, doing their celebrations and hanging out. And you like, I want to be there. Like, I want to be a part of that. And the fact that I couldn't at the time, it obviously is tough for any kid growing up. And there was one particular night in which me and my brother had bunk beds. And I remember just rolling back and forth on a bunk bed. I had the bottom bunk, and I always tell people I had the bottom bunk because I was the favorite child. But now you hear this first. I would just remember rolling over and I bumped my hand on a wall. And I woke up screaming and crying, and I ran into the kitchen. I caught on top of the counter drawer, took a knife out, and tried to remove my own fingers. And before I was able to move my own fingers, my mom stopped me. And, you know, being a parent now, obviously I didn't know how traumatic the experience was then for my mother. Now that I've been a parent now, I was like, I see my kid doing something like that. I'm like, oh, my God, that I will be shaking. And, yeah. You know, my mom and my dad had to make a huge decision to the next day having my fingers removed. And during that process of having my fingers removed, that's when, you know, now I do motivational speaking and stuff. And now, so I always tell people, like, that was a moment where I had to cut something off to gain some sense of freedom for me. And that was that moment in which, coming from the hospital, my mom was telling me, I don't want you going outside. Don't get the bandages dirty. I don't want you doing this. One ear out the other. I'm outside, I'm playing with my brothers, I'm getting picked on the team, I'm coming inside with a dirty bandage, but I'm holding a football. And then that when it all started. And that same year I got signed up for football. I started at 4 years old after my surgery.
That's such a crazy, like, life-altering decision you made at such a young age and such, like, your perseverance, which I guess obviously carries you all the way to where you are now. So it makes
Yes.
sense. So you growing up, like then you get to 4 years old and you start playing football and doing all those things. Like, what is kind of like the stuff that you're having to deal with as a kid that your brother's not having to deal with? Like, are there people picking on you, or how are your parents being supportive in that process?
Perception. I feel like a lot of people, a lot of times, young kids and adults, growing up where they try to put their own limitations and set their own, restraints or whatever on me. And I think that's what something my brother probably had to deal with as much, but he dealt with it just because he's a twin. So if I heard it, he's gonna hear
Yeah.
it. And I tell people too, like my brother was like a huge protector. Like if anybody had like a security guard, and I had a twin security guard ready for anything, So, and it's funny because even when I was 8 years old, like my brother was so overly protective and didn't allow people to like say certain stuff, because if he felt the type of way, he's not going to ask me what I felt like. He just like, I feel what you feel, so I'm just going to. It was one time where a little girl had called me a pickle hand, and my brother like immediately slapped her. Like it wasn't no like, let me second guess it. I don't think I should. No, slap. Like you should have said that. And it goes to show, like, you don't care who you are. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't disrespect my brother. You'll be okay. Like, but that's how he always been, even with us growing up. But it's just like, you couldn't stop from somebody having their own opinion. You couldn't stop from somebody setting limitations on something that they're not used to seeing. And that's what it was, especially playing football in a sport that's, you got to be very active, and you got to really accumulate these skill sets and practice them to be good on a football field. So you'll go to certain coaches, and even when I was 7 years old, I had an opposing coach who was getting ready for a playoff game tell me that, this game is for a two-handed player. You play one hand, you'll get yourself hurt. So it's like, even then, you already saying that I should deserve to be here. Obviously, I played this whole season, and we get ready to play you guys in the playoff game. This doesn't even matter. And that you're gonna set this limitation on me that I don't deserve to play this game. So like, even during that time in which I could have took it in a way, especially being a kid and hearing that from a coach, that's an adult. I could have took it like, oh, maybe he's right because he's an adult. Of course, he's right. I'm a kid. And instead of that, way I was growing up, way I grew up with my brothers and my mom and dad was never allow somebody to think that they're above me, and never allow myself to think that I can't do something. And it's like somebody doubt me, but then show them differently. So I always carried myself with that chip on my shoulder. And when I heard that, it made me even more upset. And that would put fuel to my fire to want to prove that person wrong. And even when we was playing, we was up by one touchdown, they're driving down the field, and I remember being that linebacker, and the wide receiver to my right did a slant, and I seen the quarterback staring at me the whole time. So now I'm just sitting on the route. So mind you, I'm a little kid, I'm 7 years old. So like, I want people to know what I'm telling you, this type of play, this is a high skill set already at a young age. So I don't want you guys to miss that. But when the receiver came close to me and I'm watching the quarterback stare at me, I sat there. He threw it right at me. I remember catching the ball and falling on my back. And when I got up and my team celebrated, I went over to the coach and flipped the ball to him and said, "That's yours. Pack your bags. Your season is over." And that was my reassurance to say, "You know what? I do deserve to be here. You ain't gonna tell me what I can and cannot do. And like, this will happen when you do." And that moment, I took it and ran with it ever since.
That's crazy. That's such maturity at such a young age to like have that confidence to be like, I don't care if you're an adult and I'm seven. Like, I know stuff that you don't know. So is that like, this seems like a very like strong emotional like reaction where it's like you have a great perception of it where they're talking shit or they're like telling you can't do something in your head. You're like, all right, well, let me show you. But I think a lot of people in life don't have that mindset. So do you think that's something that you were just born with naturally? Is that something your brother has too? Or is that something just because of your situation? Or is that something your parents like actually taught you?
I mean, I feel like in some parts, some people may say genetics, but I think it's the way, because like the way my parent was raised, I feel like my dad had hardships, my mom had hardships, and I feel like being around certain people, they understand certain values. Like if you have a mindset that's going to be negative, then you got to know that more negative is going to probably come behind it. If you have a mindset that's more positive and you believe in yourself and you take out certain words of negativity, like if you're trying to do something to prepare yourself for something and you say, "I can't do this," then what perception are you giving yourself? Like, I really can't do this. And then the more that you keep saying it, then it becomes muscle memory. Then it becomes, this is an actual fact. And a lot of times is when it comes to a mentality is, in which I learned from my parents growing up, where it's like, you got to choose a mentality and then believe in the mentality that you're choosing. People say, oh, you got that dog in him. If you're not really telling that to yourself and embracing it, you really ain't gonna think you got that dog in you, just hearing it. But if you're like, oh, I got that dog in me, and I'm saying it with passion, and now I'm starting to believe in it. And a lot of times is when they were telling me, never tell yourself you can't do something, I live with that, and I made that my mindset, whereas it's like, I'm not gonna say I can't do it, because that's doing a disservice to myself. And the thing is, my parents used to say the word can't is not in our vocabulary. So it's certain actions and certain words, and you got positive self-talk. You got, trying to reinforce believing in something. And sometimes that starts with giving yourself gratitude. It's all about how you talk to yourself and how do you create this mindset that's more positive than negative. And my parents and my brothers, and a lot of times learning from them, was teaching me is like, I have to choose this for myself, even though you want it for me. I gotta believe that I can do this instead of saying I can't do this. I gotta believe that I am great at football instead of somebody telling me that I'm not. I have to believe that I do deserve to be here instead of somebody saying that you shouldn't be here. And it's just like, either you're gonna believe in the negative or you're gonna believe in the positive. It's two types of people. You can't just sit in the middle, because you're gonna get pulled in every direction. Choose positive or choose negative.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear why you've accomplished what you have. I mean, your mindset is elite, and it seems like it's been that way since a young age from your parents and from just your circumstances and your own just outlook. So all right, so your mindset is probably elite over everybody else. You and your brother playing football at a young age, but you guys aren't the only kids in Florida playing football at a young age. So
Right.
how was you and your brother's like athletic ability stacked up against everybody else? Were you guys like bigger, faster, stronger, or were you guys like
I mean, a point from being, well, super fast was always fast. I think I was a good God-given talent. But I think because me and my brother being so close and being twins and playing the same sports and being involved in the same thing, honestly, my biggest competition was always my brother. Like, it's not too many people like in this world in general. My brother played in the league too, so he's a freaking athlete. I never had any competition that was better than my brother. No matter when I was 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, I'm 28 today. There's no better competition than my brother ever, ever, ever that I went against. And the thing is, that's the type of, I won't say pressure, but that's the type of skill set that we was given to each other, where it's just like, we competing to see who eat the most. We're competing to see who walked the fastest through the school. We're competing to see who's going to be more attentive to detail. Like, we walk in the school, and in between each crack of the walkway on the sidewalk, you want to get 2 steps. If you take three, you got to take a step back. So it's just like, even if you mess up, I've seen you caught that, go backwards. Like, we always made each other better. So when we going against other kids, no matter young or old, it's just like, I hope that you're ready to handle the standard that we're going to get. Like, all we know is all gas, no brakes. And like, it used to be times, like, even in practice or games, where kids would come up to us like, hey, can you guys chill out? I'm sorry, I don't know how to, bro. You know what I'm saying? I'm in high school. Me and my brother, this is a random play. Me and my brother in high school, we was on punt return, and we was guarding the gunners, the ones that run down to make the tackles and stuff. And it was like a double team. We had the nastiest double team in high school party history. Like, we used to grab people. And the fact that me and my brother was on the same wavelength, we'll take people off their feet and go running toward the other end zone and then throw them. We got flags before. Like, if I can send you a clip, if I can find a clip, I will send it to you how we used to just demolish people. But it's because, like, when you got both of us on the same team and we know this standard that we finna give you, you're gonna be scared before you even start to play. And we used to put fear in people like that because we played at such a high level so fast. And we used to keep that type of competitive nature in everything we did. So people are like, oh, I need to chill. We don't know how to, bro. Like, if I chill, my brother gonna beat me. Well, if I chill, my brother gonna beat me. So it's just like, it's no chill, bro. I don't know how to stop it. People are like, oh, you such an effort guy. I mean, I always been like this. Like, I'm gonna run, and I'm gonna try to run faster because I got one guy on my back. We going back and forth. He get a play, I make a play. He beat me in a race, I beat him in a race. Like, hey, I can't worry about you. I can't worry about the other kids right now. I still battling against and competing against my twin. It never stops.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, I have a little brother and I understand the competitiveness, but we're 4 years apart. I know for twins, that's like the whole nother level that is
We 60
nonstop.
seconds apart. It's 60 seconds apart. There's no really no big difference. So it's just like, and even when you watch, if you look up like the Combine 40, and they did this the simulcam with me and my brother, our movements mimic each other. And I'll be trying to tell people, like, just look at certain things, where it's just like, when my dad is training us, we're practicing together. When my dad working us out, we're moving together. When we're racing, we're going against each other. We play football, we're going against each other than other teams. Like, We got to the point where when we were doing and working out and stuff like that, like we mimic each other's movement. So people were watching the 40, like we run the same. You know, it's like arm for arm, step for step. Like it mimics each other. And that's just how we've always been. There's so many stuff where it's just like, I can do a drill, my brother can do the drill. And even though we're in two different spots, our movements are same.
Yeah, I mean, that's so perfect because, like, in any great team, they always talk about, like, the competition within the locker room, right? You want to find someone, like, to compete with. But, I mean, you guys are literally, like, competing with each other and everything all the way. And, like, I bet people are even competing to compete with the level you guys are at.
And even the fact they're trying to catch up, me and my brother are not worrying about them catching up. We still, like, I got to work harder to get you back. So, it's like, we always progressively going up. Like, so, for us to even, you know, go through all the process of high school, college, the NFL, it's just like our competitiveness that we had against each other what allowed us to kind of over display amongst different platforms and different stages because we really didn't see other competitions like that. We didn't care about names. We didn't care about your stats. We didn't care about – all we cared about is when you do this rep, you better give your best. Because if you don't, you're going to lose. And then that's the thing where it's like we always knew if you don't do your best right now, that may be the rep. So it's just like we can't not give all out, give it. Even if you're tired, you better give it because even if you're tired too, but it's like the person who's going to give the most is the person who's going to win the rep.
Hey, you get me fired up, man. You should do some coaching too.
Oh, I got asked. Stan Fran gave me an offer to come coach when I retire. But I'm just not ready for that. That's too fast. You put that commitment to football, it's time to say, you know what? Walking away from football is trying to kind of put more into myself and things outside of the football world and still trying to find ways to help people.
So, all right, so back to your football career. So after high school, like, are you and your brother, like, pretty highly scouted recruits? What was your whole recruiting process like?
I was a 3-star. My brother was a 4-star. We was recruited pretty well, but, you know, it started off kind of shaky because of, you know, a lot of teams didn't know that my brother had a package deal, but obviously it wasn't because he did this one. You know, pinky promise with a kiss, like, hey, we're going to go to the same school. We're going to get the same degree. You know, we're going to go to the league. We're going to marry twin girls, live in the same house. Honestly, we like 90% proof on that besides the twin girls part, so that's really not that bad. That's a pretty good, solid pinky promise, you know? But, you know, his first offer was University of South Florida, which is in Tampa, which is considered like a home team type of thing because St. Pete and Tampa, damn near the same. And I got offered by like UMass, University of Massachusetts was my first offer. And the University of South Florida coach called my parents and was like, we want Shaquille to attend the camp. We getting all our scholarship guys and all like our offer guys to come to this camp. And they said, bring Shaquille too. We want to look at him more. And in a sense where it's like, okay, they didn't care about my film. I didn't care enough to say my film could have got me that scholarship. And we ended up going to the camp, and on our way driving up there, you know, my brother had told my mom, I was like, hey, mom, I don't want to participate in this camp. I'd rather have my brother participate and get all the shine. And usually my mom don't play that. Like, if she pays for something and we go somewhere, like, you're doing it. And my brother was like, no, I shouldn't. Like, let the focus be on him because they need to see what he actually can do. And then obviously hearing it twice, my mom was like, okay, I respect that. I see what's going on. And when I got to the camp, coach was asking my brother, why are you not participating? You know, we want to see more of you. Like, my brother was like, nah, watch this, watch my brother. And literally, you know, after warm up, we started doing one-on-one. I'm talking about rep after rep. I'm grabbing guys by the necks, by the chest. I'm jamming guys up, you know. And then now I'm telling myself, all right, I only got me like 3 reps in. I'm jamming the right receivers up. I'm like, okay, it's time to keep talking my man. And then now my brother talking to Travis, like, yo, we came here to get some work. Like, where's the work at? Like, where's your best recruits? Like, I thought you said scholarship guys. This look like these guys still trying to figure themselves out. Like, give us your best recruit. And then they got their 2 best receivers, you know, who was already on scholarship. One was committed. And, like, literally one after the other. One came up. He tried to do, like, a stop route, like a 12-yard start route. I ended up jumping around, getting an interception, threw the ball back to him, like, go take that to your coach. And then the second one came up, and he tried to do like a 9 route. I guess this guy didn't know I had speed. I ended up running past him and ran under the ball. Another interception. Hey, take this to your coach and tell him like, yeah, y'all figure yourself out. And the next thing you know, I ended up winning the MVP of the camp. And then the head coach, I was the only person to go up to the office and speak to the coach and whatever. And then they gave me a full ride scholarship, and I turned it down because you didn't believe me in the first place. I had to come do this just for you to say, okay, you can come here. That's too late for that. That means I would have came here and I can't trust you. I was like, I appreciate the offer, but I can't do this. And I remember looking at my mom and my brother, and they just smiling like, yeah, we all the popping now. Like, yeah, but that's that moment led up to that. And it had to be, and it had to be seen, and I had to have a chip on my shoulder and believe that I was going to go out there and do that, because it kind of just put me into that space where it was like, either you're going to believe in what I can do and you're going to get a gym, or you're going to be the one that's going to miss out. And that's how it was. Like, after my college career, I could have played in any college in the country. People just don't know. Sometimes you got to believe, you got to bet on yourself sometimes. And that's kind of what it was. And then my brother did an interview, was like, no matter what, I say, listen, I'm not leaving my brother. So if you're not coming to offer both of us, don't come to offer us at all. And it was simple as that. My brother ended up having like 35 offers. I had like 26. And I remember Central Florida came up and we did a official visit. Not official visit, but we did it was like a parent visit, something. And we ended up talking to the coach and stuff like that, hung out, loved the school. The coach came back to our house, met my parents, was like, I want to offer them both a full ride. And the thing is, I can't take one without the other. So the one don't want to go here, I'm not going to give none of these scholarships. And that's the first time where it's just like, now this is a coach who's all in. And we end up committing on the spot. And then, boom, we're taking our talents to Central Florida and Orlando.
Wait, so did you guys play South Florida?
Oh, every year.
Yeah, what were those games like? Are you guys big shit talkers on the field during
Oh
games?
yeah, of course. But thank you. Like, a lot of people don't know, like, I didn't play the first 3 years of college.
You didn't start your first 3 years?
I didn't play the first 3 years of college, bro. I got kicked out of college and everything.
So what
Oh
was that
yeah,
journey?
it gets deep, dude. Like, it's a process, man. I've talked my butt off to get here. You know what I'm saying? Like, the first 3 years of college, man. The first year, you can be a true freshman, you can be a red shirt, which is, it's common in both areas. So the first year, I redshirted. I'm playing safety at the time. This is before I even went to linebacker, DN, or all that stuff. I was a DB, and so I was like, we had a draft pick. Clayton Gathers, he got drafted to the Colts, during that year. So we got some dogs. Like, so it's like I'm gonna learn from now. I'm a redshirt. I'm gonna get good. We're gonna be straight. We're gonna be balling. So I was like, I'm okay with missing out the first year. Then the second year come, I'm starting to make plays. I'm starting to, stand out in the camp. I'm moving up the depth chart. Like, okay, I'm here now. I'm making something happen. But every time the season starts, I'm getting my gear for practice. I'm getting scout team gear. So it's like, I'm not on the team. Like, what? I was second string safety, and then I'm fourth string. Like, what happened here? Like, and then coming towards the third year, and you see that the same thing is happening commonly, where there's like, this year I gotta make it. Like, well, I'm not gonna make it, and next thing you know, I'm getting sent home before camp. That's why after spring, I'm getting sent home because the coach wanted to see if my brother can do well without me. See, my brother was a true freshman. So this one I know is like, okay, and this recruiting thing right here, and I'm not trying to be naive about it. I'm thinking that he wanted my brother more than he wanted me, but he knew that he couldn't get here without me. But he's been playing since his freshman year, and now you're trying to see if I'm not here, how good can he get? So it's just like, okay, what that is for me? All right, do I stay in my dorm? Don't go to practice? All right, cool. So I'm in my dorm. They're going to, the morning workouts or whatever the case may be. And I'm going just to run. I'm going to the school gym. I'm going to the track. I'm working out. And then the trainer came and grabbed me and brought me to the office. And the head coach told me, if you get caught on campus again, I'm going to call the police on you. I said, okay, whoa. Now this is a bit much. Like, what is the problem with me? I got my own daughter sitting in the dorm until this, whatever called trial or suspension or whatever this is, or you trying to see if my brother getting better. Whoa, that was weird. So I'm thinking I can be on campus. He's like, no, if I cut you on campus, I'm calling the police. You need to go home. I said, home back to St. Pete's? So it's like, I may not come back? Like, so mind, this is probably one of the toughest times in my form of football because of how much I was going through, and now the game is being taken away and it's out of my control. And I'm back home with my parents, and you start to have a lot of other factors, mentality start creeping in. You got fear, you got doubt, you got uncertainty, you got, second guessing yourself. You got all these stuff start to creep up that you had a handle on for so many years, and now it's like I'm older and I'm battling something that's different. You know, I can't say like, oh, well, let me show you. I can't even do that. And that's when I understood faith had to start playing in a little bigger than me having the ability to prove somebody wrong. You know, and just having that chip on my shoulder. And the one thing that stood out for me, even though I was working these two jobs, I'm towing cars from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., working out from 7:30 to 8:30, going to clean the Dodge Ram building from 9:30 to 12:30 at night, Monday through Saturday. And one thing that stood out was my brother would call me every single day while I'm getting ready for work. And he's like, hey, keep working out. Hey, keep working out. You going to work out today? Hey, keep believing. Keep believing. Stay ready. Stay ready. And I talked to him now. Like, do you remember what you were saying when we was 18, 19 years old? Do you remember that? He was like, bro, I just really want you to not give up and stuff like that. And thing is, what he was displaying is he believed in me so much that he was gonna wait until I started believing in myself to get it back right. And that's something where I tell people now is sometimes you got to believe in other people's belief until yours wake up. And the people's belief that you believe in is the ones who care about you. It could be your parent, it could be your mentor, it could be your grandmother, it could be your brother, it could be a friend who want to win, who want you to see you win so bad that they're going to believe you. They're going to always tell you. They're going to always going to give you more insurance to say that you're going to get this. And sometimes, even though you're feeling doubtful, believe in what they say and hold on to that until you're starting to kind of get back to where it needs to be. And then I got my opportunity back on the field. And a lot of people don't know is when I got my opportunity back to be on the team again, the head coach asked my brother, I mean, told my brother to come to the office and told him that they're going to send me to a JUCO to finish college, and football wasn't a fit for me. And he told the coach, like, well, if you don't believe him, I'm always going to believe him. And I know he is a fit for this. You just don't want to see it. So you can get my paperwork together too, because we'll both go to JUCO. And then he quit. But like I said before, you couldn't lose that true freshman, that guy who's been putting in the, you got, you couldn't lose no dog like that. And next thing you know, I end up coming back.
Dang, that's, I like what you said about like the believing in someone else's belief if you don't believe in your own. I think that's really powerful. That's awesome that your brother was basically gave him the ultimatum, like either he's coming back or I'm leaving too. What so now that you've kind of like your way past that scenario, looking back, like what do you think it was that they were trying to keep you off the field for so much? Did you ever get like clarity or closure on that?
I feel like it's a business thing where it's just like when you have something new, when you have the product of something new that hasn't been yet viewed, that hasn't been yet on mainstream. Listen, we're talking about D1 here. And you're going to be the coach to say, I put the first D1-handed football player starting on the football field, and I'm the first coach to do it. That came with its own program. That came with its own meter. That came with its own. Everything that I did came with its own freaking genre of media acceptance. Where people are like, oh my goodness, this story, oh, this is, that's unbelievable. Oh, this. But he didn't want it. Old school coach, he wasn't ready to be the first one to do it. And the thing is, his old school way of style of football was everybody's uniform. Everybody looked the same. No long hair, no facial hair. This is the blue collar football player. And I got the blue collar football player that I got one hand. That's not my image of football that I grew up in. So sometimes where you get it where people with, you know, missing limbs or disabilities and stuff like that, it always been in history where they get looked at as a minority because of it may not look good for the eye. It may not look good, but that's why it's like now more people with disabilities are trying to get on the mainstream and main screen of like broadcasting, because there used to be a time where like they couldn't broadcast because it was too short for eyes. My old coach didn't think that it was a fit for me because it didn't look right. It wasn't American football. It was never done, so they couldn't do it. And then we went 0-12, and then when we got Scott Frost, that's when history changed.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that old way of stubbornness is kind of ridiculous, especially when you're at a like a middle of the pack school like Central Florida. It's like I feel like something like that could help you so much in recruiting and media and get you.
But the thing is, this coach was the not only the head coach, but he was the athletic director. He had too much power. Too
Yeah.
much power. Too
Okay,
much
so then you
power.
go 0-12, then you get Scott Frost there. Then what is it like when you finally get to start and play?
I mean, Scott Frost was just a total refreshment. Like he brought in new life, young, new acceptance, you know, second chances, start over. I remember I first met him because a lot of people was like, oh man, tell Scott Frost to keep me, you know, all the old training stuff. No, all y'all gotta go. There's this clear house, Scott. There's this clear house. And I remember he was like, why didn't you play? We watching your film, and all the coaches was like, shot with your speed, shot with your hitting ability, shot with your awareness. Why haven't you been playing? I said, how many words you need? I was like, what you want me to say? He's like, well, there's no, we're not gonna view that here. He's like, we just thinking something special here. We're gonna move your position to outside linebacker. What you think about that? I said, coach, I don't care if I play kicker. I just want to play football. And it was like, keep that same energy. You're gonna play a lot of football. And I was like, I walked out of the office, a new man. Like, here we go. This is all I need. He's giving this a little shot of light, and I'm gonna take it. Like, it's everything. And that's exactly what happened. And like, my first game that I started, like, so nervous. My brother's a senior now, so imagine how long I've been waiting to even get back on the same
So
field as
you're
him.
considered a freshman at this point?
I'm a redshirt junior
Redshirt
now,
junior
with Scott Frost got here.
with no playing time before prior.
I think I got special teams a year before, but that's when we was on 12. Like, anybody gonna play? Like, the cheerleaders can play if they want to, but decided to play. But when Scott Frost came, it was my first game. I had so much anxiety and so much like just nervousness, even though like I knew I could make some plays, but it's just like in the beginning, the first couple of plays, I was like so nervous. I remember chasing the ball backside, and I'm throwing up, chasing the ball. Like, imagine you the running back running away from somebody, literally like just barfing all over the place behind you. Like, you better not stop or you're gonna get throw up on your back. Like, it was crazy. And I remember going to my brother, like, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Like, this too much. And he's like, bro, you couldn't breathe. You won't be able to talk. Like, relax, relax, like, relax. Play football. You waited too long to mess this up. Like, just go have fun. I'm right beside you. Go have fun. And literally, like, next play, sack. End of the game, 3.5 sacks, forced fumble, 5 tackles for a loss, 14 tackles. And my brother had, like, an interception or something like that. It's like, next thing you know, the next morning, I'm driving to my class. And me and my brother's on the radio. They said, look at the Griffin twins starting at the UC. I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't become famous overnight. Like, and it was, and ever since then, bro, just like it's skyrocketing, bro. Like, I'm on billboards, I'm on cop cars, I'm on, you know, just my face is plastered at Magoo, my place plastered at restaurants and bowling alleys and all types of functions downtown, in town, out of town. And it was just like, it's insane. Like, yeah, it was nuts. It was nuts for sure.
All that hard patience paid off, it seems like. Got a just one little small break of just getting a fresh new coach in there, kind of changed everything for you. What
Yeah.
at college, what was your it was that your biggest highlight or your most fond moment in your college career, or was there something else?
What, plan?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, I feel like, nah. Yeah. Playing. I mean, I think my last year, my that undefeated year when we won national, like, you know, we will claim national championship. But obviously, we was on the team who didn't lose in the whole country. But that's college football, whatever. But besides that, like, I feel like that was my funniest year, where going undefeated, feeling the love, feeling the atmosphere, feeling like what I'm doing is making a difference. Like, and the thing is, I didn't even know I was motivational. That's the crazy part. Like, I didn't. Something where it's like I always wanted to find a way to self-serve and help people, and I didn't know I was already starting to by just doing what I love and having faith in it. And I was like, who knew how big that was for people just to see it and be on cool, like, you know, being broadcast. And I feel like that year when I went undefeated, where I finally was able to put in something that I learned and was able to teach it to my teammates, was like, bro, we all literally believe. And one thing, I promise you, bro, no one's gonna stop us. That even when we're feeling like we're down, if we all on the field feeling the same type of way, I feel like we can figure ourselves out. And I feel like I'd rather go fight for that last single grab with you guys than the other guys we're going against. And the thing is, I even during the camp, like, I slept inside the facility for 2.5 weeks. Where it's just like I'm full access 24/7. If you need me, you got me. If it's not just film, okay, cool. You wanna lift weight and talk? Cool. If you need stuff to get out your mind, cool. Like, down from my receivers, DBs, quarterbacks, like, and that's when me and the quarterback got real close, and we were the captains of the team. And even when he was going through stuff that was more than football, we was able to talk through it, and that brought him closer to me. And it's like we were able to display that amongst any team. I mean, not any team, but any player, no matter if he's a freshman, a redshirt, senior, you know, walk on, bro, you was you the same. Because, like, thing is, I know it's important just as well as the freaking starter as me. being a starter who's always going to set the example, always going to run, who's always going to give effort, who's always going to just run his butt off in practice. It's like, if I'm going to do it, I need to walk on the boot because you're just as important as me. And they said, the scout team, I need you to do that same thing because you're just as important to me. Because when I leave, you better keep this culture and don't let nobody screw it up. You know what I'm saying? I'm for you and you for me. As simple as that. It's one team, one heartbeat, and you better live by it. And when everybody was on that type of energy, dude, we was balling. Like, we were going again. Like, we knew we was going to win. Like, ain't no ifs, ands, or buts. Like, even when we played Auburn in the Peach Bowl, it's like, when we went in, like, we knew folks were down there so much that they made us believe in more. Like, we finna kick their A-word. Like, we've all over the field. It was so bad. Like, we was doing it. Like, we had old linemen like, hey, bro, what can I do better? Well, they don't talk to me until I'm done with you. Like, you know what I'm saying? But we all felt that, like, y'all hear this? We all on one page. And when you got a team with all cylinders, offense, defense, special team, everybody believe in it.
Yeah, man.
We had the mentality that year for sure.
Too bad there wasn't the 12-team playoff then. It would have been exciting.
Man,
to see
we would have changed. We would have changed odds for sure. We would have changed the pain so much. It would have changed the pain so much.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you're a great, not probably just a vocal leader as well, but more of just a lead by example, just in everything you do. So it doesn't surprise me that you're realizing that you're more of a motivational speaker. Just when you talk, it gets me fired up.
I think I learned that in college too, where it's like you got your players who vocal, you got your players who are example. I was like, well, I want both. You know, it's like at first I was just the vocal person, but I was just like, man, if I'm gonna tell people you need to freaking run, well, Keem, you better go. The ball weight on the other side of the field, you better go run. And I used to tell myself, just do it. And I chase the whole ball down, punch it out, and the coach is like, oh my goodness, are you ready to do that? So now I'm in practice. We watching the practice film, and the only thing they're gonna do is show all my tapes of me just running. Anyway, just running, and like, this is the effort we need. Like, if he can do it, there's no excuses for anybody else.
Yeah, and I mean, I played sports, obviously not at the level you have, but like, obviously, no matter how good you are, like, putting in that effort and running, it sucks. Like, it's not fun.
Oh yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. It's so funny, bro. I just got on the phone with my brother literally before this, and he was like, yeah, I just left my workout, I threw up, and I'm just like, bro, that sucks. Like, the effort that you gotta put in, it sucks. Like, he's like, bro, last time I threw up, was like, I think I was trying to brush my teeth, bro. It's like, I swallowed a toothpick, and I'm like, I said, other than that, there's no workout, there's nothing I'm gonna do, I'm gonna be like, oh, I'm gonna throw up. Like, it does sucks, and it obtained that type of effort in that type of sport, or sports in general. Like,
yeah, especially D1 college football. So for you, I'm guessing you're like most leaders were like, you're able to push that pain a little bit more because you're viewing yourself as like, everyone's looking at me, they got to see me do it. And does that help you, like, being a leader help motivate you to go through that hard stuff?
Yeah, and I feel like it gave me appreciation for my work, you know, and I think that was like a big standout for me. It was like, not only is it going to be an example, but it's really going to bring more of a dog out of me, because like, I can't come off the field. I don't want to come off the field. And it's just like, I want to be that person where I'm dead tired, and I'm seeing this guy, big old lineman who was exhausted, and I was like, you know what? Can't even shake it off. And then I just stopped freaking breathing hard. And he looking at me like I'm crazy. And I was like, this is the rep where I'm going to give so much energy that you're going to be way more exhausted, and you're going to wish that you didn't even go that hard. So it's just like, this is when I make my step. This is when I really make my move. Like, he exhausted, I'm just going to just cut it out. Like, this is the time. This is the moment that all that running you were doing, all right, make it make sense. It's like, now I'm going to go freaking crazy mad, man. Like, where do you get this second juice from? It's like, it's just, I just hold it in my back pocket to like, this is the moment to pull it out. And it's always like toward the fourth quarter, everybody exhausted. And it's like, I can't give that extra burst. And then boom, I come in with this unbelievable burst just flying past everybody. And you just got to be ready to pull it out, because it's just like I said before, either I'm going to give more than you, or you're going to give more than me. And I'd rather be that person. I choose it for me. And it's like, if you're thinking about it, it's too late for you then.
Yeah.
The reason it's too late. I already chose it. I chose this for me already.
Yeah, your mental composure is definitely elite. All right, so then you go through your college career. You have that great season. And then people's like, you finally got everyone in that whole building, probably the whole city of Orlando, probably believing in you and has no doubts in you. But then you go to the NFL draft process, and then it's probably the same thing, I'm guessing, over again, where there's scouts or there's coaches doubting you. Or do you feel like that was kind of – that narrative was kind of pushed to the side because of your college career?
I mean, honestly, with the credentials and stuff that I had, I was projected to go high. And like I said before, I feel like it's just business, man. It's business of having people with disabilities and missing limbs and still fighting for inclusion. And that was just moments of it. Like, I'm just a small piece of it, man. Like, did some good stuff, but definitely a small piece of it. Where it's just like, they wasn't a lot of coaches couldn't see them being the ones to say, no, I would do. Even though like his running is unbelievable, catching is good, his drills are good, his film is it jumps off the tape. I went to the Senior Bowl and then I won MVP at Senior Bowl. It's like he playing amongst all the best drafties. Like, why wouldn't I? And there's only one factor on it. I check off every single box, only one factor because what it looks like.
Yeah, I
And
mean, I.
what he have and don't have.
It's such a like a fear mindset that these GMs and guys have is like this fear of like, oh, what if he's not good? It's gonna make me look bad. But it's like, oh, it's
Yeah, they
actually
put, I
the,
mean,
but it's actually
push
the,
people.
it's the opposite that's true because you can look at your first coach at Central Florida. It was that fear that stopped him, and actually, that's what made him look like an idiot, right?
At the end of the day, yes, exactly that. And it's crazy because it's like now that my moments that I had in the league and stuff like that, and a lot of times the people ask, like, why do you retire and stuff like that? And I'm like, I just wanted to be on my own terms. And most of the time was like I played football for the sheer enjoyment. It wasn't about the funding. It wasn't about, oh, okay, I want to go put my family up in this huge mansion, or I want to be a Hall of Famer. Like, no, I wanted to play because they said it was impossible. They said only 1% of the goal, only 1% can go. There's never been a one-handed player. My coaches would say, was the high school out of the whole football team, maybe one person to get drafted. And I was just like, well, shoot. It's me and my brother. It's already two of us. Like, so I'm not gonna make it. He will. He ain't gonna make it. I will. It's like, so it's just like you have all these stereotypes. You have all these statistics, and it's just like, how do I beat the statistics? I'm like, well, I gotta better myself. Where it's just like people say only 1% of the population makes it to the NFL, and I was just like, well, so what that makes me then?
Yeah, I mean you're the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, like you
You know what I'm saying? So now when I tell people, I was like, if I can be an impossible number, what's your excuse?
Yeah.
If I can be this number that's not a stat, that you can't Google, that you can't read, that you can't get advice for, what's your excuse? Whatever you're trying to do, be that 1%. Be the impossible number. The people are going to say you're not supposed to be here. People are going to say it's too short for eyes. People are going to say it's this. People are going to say it's that. They always gonna put their own limitations, but only limitations that you have is 1% for yourself.
100%. Yeah, it's like the old phrase of people will tell you like, oh, everybody can't be an NFL player. It's like, yeah, that's true, but I can. Like,
That's your and it's strictly your choice, but are you willing to do whatever it takes to get there? And that's really the what a 1% the 1% to stand out. It's just like, I'm gonna do the extra work, I'm gonna do the extra study, I'm gonna do the heavy involvement, I'm gonna be, have unwavering faith in this. I'm gonna do whatever it takes and be crazy about this because I want to get it that bad. And it's just like, remember what I said, who's gonna do right the longest? Who's gonna give more effort the longest? And those are the ones who's gonna make it there. It's just like, even though you're tired, I'm still gonna give it. Even though I'm tired, I'm still gonna give it. Like, if you stop, I'm sorry, but I'm just gonna keep going, bro. Simple. And the third word is not rocket science. I'm not telling you got to be the strongest. I'm not telling you to be the fastest. I'm not telling you, because I definitely was not those things. I wasn't the biggest. I wasn't the strongest. I was fast. I had something. But just like my work, my effort, my unwavering faith is what allowed me to be where I was going. My thing was to listen to other people's sayings and people who believed in me and using that and fostering this energy up and say, you know what, even though this sucks, people believe in me. So I'd be doing a disservice and I'd be slapping myself in the face if I didn't believe in it too.
Yeah, so you said you were projected to be a high draft pick, and then you get go in the fifth round. I mean, kind of take me through like the emotional roller coaster of that, and then the excitement
Oh
of like
man.
playing with your brother getting drafted to his team.
I mean, that would make it worth it. I'm just put it out there. But yeah, talk about emotional roller coaster. Oh my. I feel like I was on a roller coaster with no seat belts. Fine.
That's going on for like
Just to get
3 days of the draft, right?
Yeah, and I'm invited to the draft in hopes of me going high, right? So the first day I was like, okay, I may get a chance that I may end up going with Seattle. I mean, that's the last big conversation I had. And I had something about, it was saying something about with Dallas and Pittsburgh. And I was like, okay, there may be a certain chance, but when you start seeing them teams off the board, it's like, okay, second day. And then Maya, I'm doing all the draft day stuff. I'm with the Saquon, I'm with, Baker, I'm with all these guys all together doing our media, doing our endorsement stuff, like everything. And you get your suits and stuff, you get all geared up, you head into the draft, you have all the big moments and stuff like that. People getting drafted, phone calls and stuff. And like first round didn't really work me out like that because I was like, I'm gonna go somewhere. I don't know what. But first day I'm hopeful. And then my brother just called me at like Seattle, letting them come fly in to, be with me during the rest of the draft process. But I was amazing. So after the first round, he came in for a second round of stuff. Me and my family back in the room. I think it was me and Garius Geis. So I think he was a running back from LSU during the time and stuff like that. And it was me and him and somebody else in the room. And the camera's all in your face. Trying to watch just any emotional break. And then I remember the commissioner coming over, or he invited me to his office. He's like, I'm going to stay in the draft because I want to call you. Like, I think you're going today. And I'm like, I hope so, man. I hope so. So it's just like, now my hope's up a little bit because I've been speaking to the commissioner. I'm like, he knows what you're talking about. So like, yeah, we're going. Like, I'm, having me a drink. Good. I'm over here doing my little dances and stuff, like trying to act. I'm just not even tripping about this. And then I remember when the day was coming to an end, I was just like getting frustrated. Like, let me, my brother was like, just walk out for a little bit. I guess he kind of sensed it. Like, let's go get some food. You go get some food. And also, I was like, man, I don't know why this is not happening. Like, this ain't right. Like, I did what I was supposed to. Like, what is all of this? And I think it didn't really hit me until I got away from the camera. And then I had like a little moment where it's just like all the emotions, all that fear, all that stuff that's like I was battling. It's like I wanted me to go higher because I felt like I was deserving of it. And the fact that it was out of my control once again, it made me upset. And I remember just yelling and crying and being mad. This ain't right. Like, I did everything I was supposed to do. Like, asking what I needed and I got it. Ask me what I was supposed to show and I did it. Like, ask me about my accolades and I bet it's on there. Like, ain't nothing that I didn't do. They say be a good kid, I did. They say, be presentable and I was. They say run fast and do good, and I did. They say stand out amongst other players, and I was the best out of a lot of them. It's like, what is it? Like, guys in front of me that was going, it's just like, where it came from? It's just like, I knew what it is. It's because I got one hand. And that's it. That's because I got one hand. And my brother had like calmed me down. It's just like, it is what it is. And just like, you didn't do it for just this. You didn't do it just for the draft moment. You did it to go make a team. You did it to go freaking play in the league. And that's your main focus, no matter if you get drafted or you go undrafted. The work got to be done. You can break it down like that. Like, I ain't nothing I can say. It was like, at the end of the day, if I made it, you made it. And I think it's always been our genre. It's like, we together, bro. If you there, I'm there. I live through you live through me. And it's just like, that's where it's just like, it is what it is. And then third day come, I stopped looking at my phone, and I just remember just being in the bathroom, and then my brother busting the bathroom. I remember this number. I know this number. I know this area code answer. Like, I'm like, man, will I forget that answer the phone? It was TK.
That's so awesome.
It was crazy. It was a lot of emotion. The nieces, the nephews, mom, dad, homeboys, friends, cousins, everybody crying. Sister, moms, everybody just like the camera guy was crying, dude. Like, it was nuts. Like, everybody's in that room freaking crying. Like, everybody in our room knew it was big. It was just like, you know what? You just made the draft pick. They called me back to the draft to walk the stage. And I'm probably the only pick ever in history to walk the stage at like fourth round, fifth round.
Wait,
Like,
so
right, I walked the stage for my draft pick.
where was the draft that year?
Dallas.
Okay. So where were you when you got the phone call?
I was in a hotel.
Okay, so you're at the hotel and then they call you to
I
go
didn't want
back.
to go. I didn't want to go back. So I was like, bro, nah, I guess I ain't going back. I ain't going back. And then when I got drafted, I was like, I wasn't drafted. I said, well, you want me to sit there and just be in front of all the cameras? Like, no, I just want to be with my family. But I ended up getting drafted. And then they like, and you come back. I'm like, yeah, I'll come back. And then I did like the whole media thing. I'm jumping with the bag. Everybody crying, going crazy. I was like, I think Seattle is an awesome place to be. And I was just like, this thing, because I could have went early and been somewhere different. And I think the Lord knew in my heart that football to me was kind of most of my brother. That thing, that was like, there was no moment in football that was, okay, better than playing with my brother. No matter if when I left Seattle and had to go play for other teams, like when I left Seattle and my brother left Seattle, we wasn't together more. It was just us just moving around. Us just like playing it because we're obviously good. And I was just like, I told myself, if I'm not having the level of experience and fun with football, I'm just like, well, I'm just hang it up. It's like, I ain't gonna talk to nobody about it. I'm not gonna confide. I'm not gonna second guess. I know the feeling that I want in football. And if it's not that, I ain't gonna do it. And I have moments where I was like, okay, I'm gonna sign with Jacksonville. I'm gonna go play with my brother. And it's like, even when it didn't work then, and they had their own certain problems, I was like, I think it's getting to the time where it's like my purpose is served here and it's not to serve others in other ways. And that's why I ended up becoming an advocate for disability. I ended up doing certain stuff outside of football because it was time for me to hang it up and walk a path somewhere else. Like I had it at the highest level. I had the most fun. I had the most crazy experiences playing alongside my brother, and I didn't want to play football just for money. And I wasn't gonna sell myself like that.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like
Even
it's
though, don't get me
difficult.
wrong, like we made a lot. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like I'm not telling for other players, like, okay, we got that. Listen, make it bro. You know, I had a different opportunity. So I had to look a little different transition from other players where it's like I had opportunities outside of football. So, you know, I don't want to just cheat other players. I ain't just leave. Like, no, make sure you have your affairs and stuff in order. Make sure you have, you know, yourself situated before you just jump the gun. You know, I thought a lot before I made my decision and knew that if I wasn't going to have this high experience of football, then it was like, I'd rather just watch it.
Yeah, I mean, things, it's definitely all meant to be. Like, I'm sure if you had the choice looking back, like, you would have decided to be drafted later to play with your brother than drafted in like the third round.
Every time, because I could have went somewhere else and then not even been happy. I would just been, you know. I remember I watched the Johnny Manziel documentary and just like how depressing it was not really feeling how you used to be in college, like
Yeah,
that
just being
sense of
alone.
safety, security, and being alone. Like it's real, and that's a mental thing. And it's just like I didn't never feel alone. I was like I had such a great experience at the NFL. And so it's like once you start going to other teams, I don't really see that. And it's just like, but you start to understand every football player are the same. Like people have enjoyment of football in so many different ways. Some people enjoy football because it's their escape for whatever trauma they're going through. You know, football can be this is my way out to help my family. You know, some people say this is football because they said I couldn't play and they said it was impossible. So it's like, bam, I'll make it possible. It's everybody different. Some people play because, hey, I like playing with my brother and we all play football in the streets together. And that's taking it to the highest level, bro. You know what I'm saying? But everybody's thing is not the same. Some people are like, I want the gold jacket, whatever it takes to get the gold jacket or a Super Bowl ring. People will jump team to team just to get a ring. They don't care how much fun they have. You know, but everybody got their own experiences in that profession.
I can definitely see what the your just enjoyment of the game and being with your brother. I was gonna ask you, what is your highlight of your NFL career, whether it's getting drafted? I mean, from a fan, I guess a fan would probably guess that it'd be sacking Aaron Rodgers with your brother, but I know that's in a playoff loss, so I don't know how enjoyable that moment was.
Man, plays are plays, bro. Like you win some, you lose some. Some people win Super Bowl, some people don't. You know what I'm saying? Aaron Rodgers was definitely top-notch. But then again, I gotta tell you, I had some plays in Philly that was super, super electric. I gotta tell you, definitely Aaron Rodgers. Because I didn't know it was my brother at first, so I definitely that's number one. I don't think they're gonna do that. That play, that sack with my brother, and then celebrating. We didn't even plan the celebration because we didn't even know that this play was even happen like this. So just like that whole celebration was random, and it felt so good. Like, I wish we would have won that. They would even just made it 10 times better, obviously. But that was my first sack as a rookie, so it's just like that was big for me. You know what I'm saying? And I'm moving from different positions within the year. Like I'm at middle linebacker at first, then I'm at will linebacker, then I get moved to DN, and now I'm rushing. I was like, okay, this is different. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like this is different. I went from the outside backer in college and I'm playing beside Bobby at will backer. I'm a stack backer now. I'm not just rushing. I'm moving side to side. That's the big boy position, man. You got to take on some guards head to head. And it's like, I like rushing. I like getting after the quarterback. I like guarding people, but you got to adapt to your circumstances and your team structure. So I like how Dallas does with, Michael Parsons. That's the type of player that I thought I was going to use that as a person who can get moved around and make things open and shake like that. But hey.
Well, you're clearly just a football player. Doesn't seem like it matters where they put you on the field. You're just going to be high motor getting after it anywhere.
Yeah, I just want to make plays.
What drives you now, and what are you most excited for the future?
Just making change. I feel like that's what I started with. And I used to tell my mom when I was younger I wanted to be a motivational speaker, but, obviously saying that and doing it now, I didn't know how it was going to come about. And as I'm getting ready to transition, I started reading a lot of more books. I was like, okay, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. Like, I feel like I love talking. I feel like I know I can get into rooms and let my energy feel felt. And I was just like, you know what, let me learn about technology. I was like, I wonder how I would be in a room in that setting. And I ended up like reading certain books about angel investing. And the next thing you know, I end up, finding my first tech company called Smart Arm, which is an AI power prosthetic. And I end up, because of me reading, I was able to, help do a freaking good contract for myself within the company. And then now, I'm spearheading it to be one of the, main prosthetics in the world. So that's been a thing. And honestly, a lot of times is when I got into really that transition, it's just like really believing and having that same type of energy and faith towards football, to whatever I do outside of it. And I think that's what's been helping me the most, because obviously with businesses and stuff like that, it's ups and downs. And I'm a part of a lot of stuff. In sense of real estate, I have a transportation business, a trucking transportation business. I'm into tech, like I said, with Smart Arm. I'm an advocate for disabilities and stuff like that. So I do a lot of times where I do clothing brands and host New York Fashion Weeks, and I'm a part of like different brands for adaptive clothing lines and stuff like that now. What else? I was able to be a part of NFL Legends, which helped other players transition from football and understand the certain benefits that they have and be able to utilize. And some guys kind of leave and just get to themselves and don't worry about nobody. And sometimes we got to let them know that, hey, we here to help you, bro. Being a part of that has been great. And I think the motivational speaking has been like my baby. Now, it's cool to do like so many businesses and stuff like that. And I like doing it. It's fun to kind of put my energy into something, because I be having a lot of pent-up energy sometimes too. And I think that's just from transitioning football. You got to scream sometimes. That's just me. But I feel like motivational speaking has been the biggest thing for me, is because it's therapeutic. And like having conversations to remind yourself of how good you did is just another reason to give myself gratitude that I'm doing the right thing. And I think motivational speaking gives me that. And it's like I've always been the person to be a captain on the team. So I was always hyping the guys up. I'm always talking. Even when I got to the league, it's like I was the guy that was like, hey, Shaquem, say something. Oh, Shaquem, come say this. So Shaquem, come turn this up for the day. Like, I always been that energy giver. And as I got older, I was starting to embrace that more. Just like, I think my energy is contagious. Like, after a while, people keep saying it, and just like, okay, maybe I should start believing that. Like, maybe my energy is contagious. And it's just like, I saw them working with like Eric Thomas, Ikey Johnson, Carlos, what's his last name? A lot of these motivational speakers, and they kind of took me under their wing. They kind of mentored me and knowing how to properly say my speech or have a keynote and how to alter it when I'm going to speak to other people. And I remember the first time I started, a lot of people were like, well, yeah, when you start motivational speaking, it's going to be really slow. And I was like, oh, man, okay. I mean, that's cool. I'm a rookie. I'm all good. And soon I started, I did like 10, 15 speeches. And then I've been doing it for 2 years, and I did over 30. And I tell people, was like, I mean, you did so far. I'm like, yeah, I'm on like number 27. It was like, what? 27? It's like, man, I did my first start. Like, it took like 5 years to do like a certain amount. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I honestly thought it was moving time to sell. I told my agent, ramp it up a little bit. Like,
what audience is your favorite to give these motivational speeches to?
I would say kids. I like talking to kids because they take in a lot of information more clearly. But I don't, honestly, it's hard to say what's my favorite, because I speak to all of them and I get the same type of feedback. But I feel like it's definitely kids. For sure. It's my favorite. I like kids. I love kids. I want to see the best for them. Regardless, kids are the most innocent thing on the earth. So I always like to give them game too. And then they're not as arrogant as adults get. You know,
Not
kids are more
stubborn.
humble. Yeah. They'll take, especially when they know you, they'll take the information for sure. But I think I like certain business events too, of like hungry go-getters. Like, you know what? I mean, you on your way, and I'm trying to just remind you that you're on your way, and that why you should continue to keep going. And I like where people, where it's just like, okay, I like to talk to them because it's just like, you know, you're hungry, you're humble. And it's just like you came here today because you needed something to give you just that extra little push to go, you know what? This will be my year. And you know what? I'm going to do better than what I was last year. And I kind of like that. And I spoke to other, you know, Fortune 500 companies, more competitive, more, you know, business type. And I was like, that's cool. But it's just like, I don't like how to just talk about how, you know, you got to be able to, you know, give yourself a certain type of energy because you're gonna always gonna have somebody behind you just trying to take your position and stuff like that. Like, I'm a person who's like, man, she, I'm a person, I give you game, but it's like, you better be really good because if you think you're gonna challenge me and beat me, just remember who taught you. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's cool. But then again, like, some people don't like to hear certain things like that, whereas it's like, you know, I'm a believer, you got to teach game to really learn game. It's just like, if I'm always teaching it, there's no, I'm learning more. And some people are just like, oh, don't teach them nothing because if I don't teach them nothing, I'm always gonna be good. I don't believe in that, but it's just like, that's why it's kind of harder to talk to them business setups because sometimes they, in a sense, have their own type of mindset. It's just like, well, I made it this far because of this. I'm not here to change anything about you. I'm just here to give you a few gems and you can take it with a grain of salt and adapt to what you see fit. Well, I was just like, well, I was like, that's why a lot of football players now obviously they get and do work with each other. It's because not only that I'm teaching you some of my stuff, you teach me some of your stuff, I can learn some stuff from you. And that's only gonna increase my game even better. Now, the thing is the effort and work you put into it. You know, if I'm always teaching, I'm always doing work and I'm always crafting myself, well then I'm doing more work than you anyway. Now, if you wanna feel like you miss know it all and you can't teach nobody nothing, then maybe you think you know something about that you ain't gotta put in that much work. It's gonna catch up with you. So it's just like I said, it's all perspective, but from a tier of who I speak to and why and you know, whatever, it's definitely that kids, hungry go-getters, and then like that Fortune 500 freaking business class who's competing for the next big thing or competing for the next raise or whatever.
I work in sales, and we've had like Eric Thomas come and speak and fire us up, and I think sales is a good group because it's kind of like that same thing. Some people are like don't want to teach what they know, their secrets, but it's like for me as a, like a leader in that have sales teams, it's like I learn a lot by teaching. Like me going over and reteaching it reprograms it in my brain of like, oh, I need, no, actually, I need to listen to myself. I
You
need to do that a little
even
more.
learn how to do it better. Yeah, you even learn how to do it better doing that. So it's like, see, you get it. As I said, like, some people just don't, like, oh, no, I can't show you nothing. Like, no, I can't tell you that. Well, you're going to take my stuff. Woo. Buddy, it's all good. I got my own swag too, bro. And like, you know, dang, it's good to take advice from here and there. Like, but I got my own swag. Everybody got their own swagger. Like, but
It's just a
yeah,
scarcity
you're
mindset.
right. Yeah,
But well, that
exactly.
was, I appreciate you coming on. That was all the questions I had for you. Is there anything else you'd like to plug or tell the people where to find you?
Oh man, find me on all socials, man. Instagram, Shaquem underscore Griffin. Twitter, Shaquem Griffin. Everything's pretty much Shaquem Griffin. You know, make sure you see that on official Texas. There's a lot of scamming pages out here. Be on the lookout for a movie, man. It's starting to put more. We put more emphasis on it now. We was with Team Imagine, company at first. We end up cutting our deal out with them, and we're not using it no more. And we opened up the market for bigger and better and. People was gonna take our stuff serious, so we ended up meeting with Michael B. Jordan Production Company, and we just did some stuff with TMZ to kind of get it going more. So now we started getting a lot of phone calls. So be ready for a movie; it's coming. It's
Hell
not
yeah.
made just no, it's not just no docuseries, it's not no Netflix series. We
Well,
going all for it, so
now I was
for
gonna
sure.
ask you. I'd imagine a movie was gonna come out about you at some point, anyways. But for you, would you want to play yourself or have someone play you?
Yeah, I get asked that a lot. I told him, I said, y'all pay me outside of my contract. I play out my movie. Well, I said, it's all business when it comes to that. But the thing is, I did a Gillette commercial and I see how that digital ties my hand on twins. So AI is something. So,
Yeah, they can definitely nowadays it's someone could play you no problem. Who would you, if you
yeah.
got to choose someone to play, who would it be? Would it be Michael B. Jordan?
I mean, that would be awesome, obviously. Obviously, that would be dope, but that was somebody I would say. I would say Michael B. Jordan. Yeah, I like that. That's gonna get some views right there.
right, well, we'll end it on that, dude. I'm excited. I'll definitely watch the movie whenever it comes out. I'll keep an eye out for it, but appreciate you coming on. That's all I got for you. Hope you have a
Yes, sir.
good rest of your
Thank you,
day.
bro.
And
Thank you for having me, man. Thank you for having me. And shoot, hey, we found our way, man. And we'll do another one for sure.
sounds good. All right, that's a show.